right, G'day Navicastrians. Welcome to your Jetstream podcast for round one of season 14 of the Hyundai A-League. The Jets travelled across the Dutch to face Wellington at the Kicktown, where we traditionally struggle, and this obviously, unfortunately, was no different. We'll run the rule over the game and the fallout around it, but first let's introduce those joining me for this episode. Obviously, I'm Ferns, back on deck with a working recording set up for the new season, and I'm joined by three of my fellow podcasters. First up, Bodes, with a new microphone and headsets. That chip rustling is going to sound a lot clearer.
I'm coming through loud and clear, hopefully.
Yeah, no, you are. It's a thousand times better than the old Apple setup that you had.
Well, I still am using the Apple, but I'm now using earphones.
Yeah, that's it. We also welcome back to it's going to be interesting to keep account of how many appearances he makes on the podcast this season. But welcome back, Mitch. How you going, mate?
I have such a high strike ratio already this season. It's phenomenal. Well, it's new season, new me, baby.
Yeah, well, it's going to
appear on more pods than I have.
Well, that's true. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. If we go back and do a count,
I hope so.
Seems that you're on, Mitch. Who ended up winning the Bold Prediction League last season? Who do you owe dinner to?
I would guess it would be Dr. Emma. I kind of lost track, to be honest.
Yeah.
I figured it'd be like most things, and I'd give up and Dave would just take over.
Which usually happens. Yeah. 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 You are the Ed Cavalier of this podcast, mate. But all right, and it's also a welcome to a new regular who's now a new regular contributor. You first heard him on the FFA Cup preview episode for the round of 32. G'day, Lucas.
Hey, how you going? Good to be back.
Good, mate. How you doing?
Good, really well.
All right. Busy. So, opening question. Lucas, we'll start with you, being the new bloke. Who's your favourite football baldy?
As in like a bold footballer?
As in a bold footballer.
Okay. I'll go Beckham when he was bold for his free kick against Greece. I think it was 2001. I'll go Beckham.
Beckham, all right. Yep. Aren't you a Liverpool fan?
I am, which is really weird.
Yeah, why are you choosing? Yeah,
on TV.
You're sacked. All right, Mitch. What about you?
all time, it is obviously Patrick Vieira for me. Just can't speak highly enough about him. But I guess current guy has to be Aaron Moy. Yeah, the Moys.
Moisey. Okay. Yep. Bodes.
Well, if I'm going to go the Newcastle flavour, it's between Ruben Zagovic and Casey the Heavies Wehrman.
Casey and his Heavies, yeah. Well, they were all bold too. Yeah. Yeah, it was a bold quartet.
They were all bold, correct. So, no, I'll go Rubes. I loved Rubes.
Wasn't Stephen Labert with him and his, all four of him, weren't they all bold?
The fridge.
The fridge, yeah. Wasn't he bold as well?
Yeah, I didn't get past his gut, mate. So I wouldn't have any idea what his hair was like.
All right, fair enough. That's definitely true. All right, I mean, if I'm going to choose a Jet, it's probably going to be Labert for that song. And also for a normal football, my all time favourite football baldy would probably be Gary Mack, basically for his massive goals and for that brilliant LFC chant that goes on for about 15 minutes. Definitely gets a regular run out whenever he's mentioned. But Gary Mack for me. So if you've got a favourite football baldy that's not mentioned.
So the Gary Mack one, it never ends, it goes on and on.
It does go on and on. Also depends who sings it as to whether it's a good chant or not.
That's true,
goes on and on and on, right? They never stop.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, true.
Shut up, Arsenal. All right, so the Jets for round one travelled across to Wellington to take on the Phoenix for a 2-1 loss. Here's the highlights from that game, thanks to Fox Sports.
The Mark Redan era is underway at Wellington Phoenix against a side coached by a man overseeing his 271st A-League game. Curto with the powerful punch, Petrados, and tipped over by Curto. Really good effort by Dimi Petrados. Here's Vargas again, lovely little turn, he'll line up a shot straight at Curto. What can Singh create here? Little dink to Rufa, back across, goal, and then headed into his own net by Daniel Georgievsky.
Oh, free kick from Singh. Stephen Taylor heads it across the goal, and it is off the top of Georgievsky's head for the own goal. Len Moss would have been a regulation catch for the Newcastle keeper. Kujewski just takes it away from his gloves, and the Phoenix take the lead 1-0.
The Phoenix come away with it, too. They from Roy Krishna. He's got away from Bogart. Could he square it? He couldn't clear up from Williams. He might now. Here's David Williams. That was going wide. Is it out of hand? It's gone in anyway. Comedy capers in the penalty area. The upshot is a goal for the Phoenix. Here's Krishna getting away from Bogart. He couldn't free up Williams the first time. The second time he did. This is going wide from Williams. Does that hit the hand of Topor Stanley before Singh pokes it in? If it does, it probably doesn't matter. Are they appealing for handball against Sarpreet Singh there?
Goal.
The goal was chalked off.
We're just waiting because there's a VAR check. I think this one's on the push in the back on David Williams as Max Burgess was possibly lining up the shot here. You can see Williams here at the top of your screen. Gets a shove in the back. And it might be that they're looking at.
We're getting some mixed messages here. We believe it also might be for something that happened to Mitch Nichols when he went down in the penalty area. Referee Daniel Elder calling for Khan. Now they're going to have an on-field review here as well. Here we go.
You can see here, Mitch Nichols there being held. Oh, it's from the corner previously.
Moss saves, and Krishna tucks in the rebound. The 3 points are safe for the Wellington Phoenix on opening day, courtesy of a controversial VAR decision. And a rebound from a good save from Glenn Moss by Roy Krishna. Wellington 2, the Jets 0.
Great save, Glenn Moss. Does his best to get up again.
Austin tries to free up Petranos. What a cracking goal by Divik Petranos. That is an absolute belter.
Watch this one from the start. Beautiful ball at the end by Mitch Austin. Lays it across into the path of Divik Petranos. We saw him let fly in the first half.
An own goal and a penalty following a controversial VAR decision, but he won't care. He will not care one little bit, and neither will they. Starved of success for so long, Mark Rudan brings a smile to the face of the yellow fever.
All right, thanks very much there to Fox Sports. Bodes, started off with you. In the preview, we were all fairly confident, I think. No one is giving Wellington much of a chance this season. Do you think maybe the team was a little overconfident heading into this game?
I'd hope not, being round one and Wellington basically having a new squad. I thought we had the better of the game in the most patches. But yeah, Wellington, credit to them. They set up ugly, but look, ugly sometimes gets points, and it got them the points.
What about you, Lucas? Do you think maybe the team was a little overconfident?
No, I thought we were just the right level of confidence, because it's round one, so you don't know what they're going to be like with a fresh team. So, yeah, I thought we weren't overconfident at all.
Mitch, obviously Jets fans being what they are, there was a little bit of fume surrounding the result of this game. Do you think people are maybe reading a little bit too much into the first game of the season away from home?
I mean, if you put it into that normal context, then yes, it's a long season. And, you know, even in last season, we always started by losing games and then we come back and win them. But how sour everyone is, it set a wicked precedent pretty early, so it doesn't bode well heading into the future.
Yeah, Bodes, I was hoping that with the season that we had, we wouldn't sort of have this ridiculousness surrounding every loss on social media, but social media being what it is, I don't really think you can expect that. It's basically going to be the team's awesome when they win and they all suck when we lose.
Mate, remember, we're going on 10 years of suck and 1 year of good. People seem to remember the 10 years of suck a lot better.
Yeah, well, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, I think that with the signing of everybody, I mean, you guys weren't on the preview episode, but the general consensus was that it should be a decent season. The rest of the league had improved quite a fair bit, but we'd signed a team 90% of the team that finished second in the league and went to a grand final. So I think everyone was fairly confident with regards to the season. What about you? And does this one result sort of maybe bring you back down to earth a little bit, or are you still fairly confident that overall we're going to be strong?
No, I'm definitely still very confident. I thought for large patches on Sunday we were in control of the game. And look, if you think about it, Jair's chance, that goes in, and amongst many others, Redenton's. We could have easily come away with the 3 points. I thought, I think I said on Friday I was very optimistic for the season. My only worry was a striking option, and it seems at the moment that these next 7 games can't finish quick enough for us to get Roy back. I just hope we're not far off the pace by the time he comes back.
What about you, Lucas? Are you confident for the season?
Yeah, I think it's only round one, so you can't really judge. We've had a lot of expectations put on us, so I'm not worried at all, to be honest.
Mitch?
The only thing I will say is worrying is when I was looking at all the players' socials in the off season, they were all talking about, you know, how long the off season was, and they were buzzing for the season. I just felt like some of them on the weekend didn't want it as much as I thought they did. I thought they'd come out flying, so maybe this is the reality check they need.
Yep, very true. All right, so Bode's starting lineup, when it came to the lineup coming out an hour before kickoff, did you have any issues with the team that was selected? Were you happy with the players that made the appearance that started the game?
I was happy on the squad, bar Lockie Jackson. I personally wouldn't have started Jackson. I was iffy on Jair, but I'm probably happy that he's got the minutes now. But yeah, I didn't quite get the idea to play Lockie Jackson on the right and Georgeski on the left even, but I would have gone with, but I haven't seen him in pre-season, but I personally would have gone with Fijika and I would have put Georgeski on the right. That's what I would have done.
What about you, Mitch? Were you similar sort of thoughts?
Yeah, when I saw the lineup, I just thought Jackson's a left footer. He's going to be playing on the left. It's probably just targeted at the players they expected to play right and left wing for Wellington. But, yeah. Jair was a surprise. I thought we'd start with Hoff up front, put Austin into the starting lineup, and Jair does look a little bit chubby, like he looks a bit unfit, so I guess minutes can be good for him, so that was probably the biggest surprise for me.
Yeah, Lucas, obviously the report came out early on, I think Friday was the NBN News report where Ernie said that Jair was starting, so obviously he's been training well. Do you think it was a bit of a mistake saying that early he was going to start?
Yeah, like what Bode said, I don't think he looks 100% in shape, but I guess he does need minutes to get there. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise that he announced it so early.
Yeah. All right, so Mitch, obviously none of us are at training, so speaking about that, and obviously, like I said, Jair was obviously training really well. Do you think that maybe that was pretty much the best team that Ernie thought that had trained well during the preseason and in that final week? That was Ernie doesn't sort of strike me as somebody who's going to pick a player that's underdone. So players coming back, obviously Can is coming back from a knee injury. He's fit and running, but he's maybe short of practice and hasn't really featured much in the lead up to this game. That's probably why Rodenton played. And obviously, with Roy unavailable, Jair was pretty much our only option. Austin, maybe Ernie thought he was a better option to bring off the bench.
Yeah, Ernie definitely strikes me as the kind of coach that says, if you train the best and if you played the best the last week, you're going to get the shot this week. Like we saw last year, Johnny Katrumbas kind of had a big impact somewhere through the season, and he held his spot for a while. We saw when Ivan Bujica kind of dipped that his spot got taken. Ernie just picks the best possible he can in his mind, is how I see it.
Yep, definitely. And it's well worth mentioning, too, that the news about Johnny Katrumbas came out after we released the preview episode, so we didn't get a chance to say anything about it on a podcast episode. So I'm sure I speak for everybody on the Jetstream team when I say best thoughts and wishes are with Johnny Katrumbas for a speedy recovery. Obviously, it's a really shocking thing to crop up in the final week that a young lad, only in his early 20s, has been diagnosed with luckily stage 1 cancer of the thyroid, which has been he was operated on. It's it looks like everything's all good with that. So we wish him all the best, and all of our thoughts are with him for a speedy recovery, and hopefully we see him back on the park sooner rather than later. Just thought we need to make sure we mention that. And it was obviously also a big thanks to the guys at Phoenix who mentioned it when we did do the preview episode, as well as the Wellington Phoenix Club actually also popped it up on the big screen before the game. That was also something that I think Vandy popped that up on social media that was mentioned. Or was that the In Memory of Darren Stewart? I can't remember which one that was. Remember that during the game?
I think it was the Darren Stewart one. I'm pretty sure.
Yep, okay. Yeah. So thanks to the Fever guys for mentioning the Katrumbas thing during the preview episode, and thanks to the club for Wellington Phoenix Club for highlighting the Darren Stewart passing away. So our thoughts are with the Stewart family, as well as all his associated friends. Obviously, Laurie was close mates with him, so our thoughts are with Laurie as well during this time. All right, so we'll get back to talking about the game. We've talked about some, highlighted a couple of people, so we'll go into them in a little bit more depth. Bodes, Jair was obviously the one that started up front. Mentioned that maybe we thought he looked a little like he was carrying a little bit of weight. I didn't really see that. I thought that he actually didn't look too bad. I think he's just badly short of match fitness. It's just going to be a question of how long it's going to take him to get up to full speed and full match practice. We probably won't see the best of him until like round 3 or 4.
Yeah, you're right. To be honest, I only really saw him got on the ball twice, and one of the times was probably the moment of the match where he really should have scored. And can I say, what a ball by Hoffman to put him into that space. I think it's just 60 minutes will write off. I guess it was almost like a pre-season match for him, and hopefully he will get better. But on first viewings, I can't really make comment.
Yeah. What about you, Mitch?
I was definitely one of the people that thought he looked overweight. His shorts looked too small for him, to be honest. Everyone I talked to that saw him before this game said that he's not much of a defensive tracker, really. So you could probably say if he wasn't fit enough, they're not going to put him out wide because then he'd have to run backwards. So maybe they just put him up front just to give him some minutes with no defensive responsibility.
Yeah, that doesn't really strike. I mean, listening to what Ernie Merrick had to say when we spoke to him in the last week of preseason, that's not the way he likes his teams to work. He wants them all doing defence. Like, he's happy for them to do what they want to do in attack, because that's why he's got so many strikers on the pitch. But Lucas, when we don't have the ball, the team has all of them have a defensive job, and that's the reason why he punted Paddo. So he's not going to flick Paddo off when he's obviously a player that wasn't short of match. If we'd have kept him, he wouldn't have been short of match fitness. He would have had a full pre-season with us to bring in a Brazilian that's not is short of a gallop, but he's going to be a player that's supposed to know what his defensive duties are. That sort of doesn't really strike me as true.
Yeah, you're right. I thought, I remember Ernie specifically saying that he's a striker that as soon as we lose the ball, and this is for everybody in the team, you have to be in defensive shape to win it back. So I can't understand why he'd get rid of Paddo, who got him halfway through the season. He would have been match fit, would have had a pre-season. It's interesting.
Did you see Jair running around doing some defensive work?
Not really. The two times that I remember seeing him, I mean, even remember the commentators saying, oh, we haven't seen much of him throughout the game. He's had a pretty quiet game besides that chance. I think he shot it with his left foot. Yep. Is that right? And it kind of, I don't know if he's right footed or left footed, but in football, you've got to be good with both anyway, I guess. So, I guess we're just going to wait and see see what he can do.
Yeah, hopefully it's going to be something that's we're going to see a steady improvement over the next couple of weeks. Bodes Jackson was another player that sort of come in for a bit of criticism, but a lot of that, like you mentioned earlier, is due to the fact that he's a left footer but was deployed on the right.
Yeah, no, that was that one shocked me. I kind of get Mitch's view that maybe it was to counter-target certain players, but I didn't see him in general. He's a centre back, and I wouldn't be playing him anywhere else. If you needed him to plug a hole with 20 minutes to go at left back, yeah, I'd do it. But yeah, he's not a fullback for mine. And look, to be honest, I think Lockie Jackson's development as a footballer in the last couple of years has stalled. I remember a couple of years ago, I think Mark Jones threw him into the lineup with Bugard, and you thought maybe that was going to be his role to keep. But yeah, I don't know about Lockie.
What about
he's just got two really consistent centre backs that he's never going to crack while they're fit and unsuspended. So they've got to try and use him elsewhere.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And maybe he's one of those players, like many Jets players before, that maybe need to move on and get a gig somewhere that they are going to get a run. He's going to get a run in his position, and in a year's time, we'll be regretting that we let him go. But yeah, he's definitely not developing. He's not developing into any threat to Topper or Bugar.
Well, I mean, Mitch, we've got to look at the fact that Bugard and Topor are a year older. They're not; they've only signed for the rest of this. They're both signed for this season, I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, he might make the decision to leave, but I'd be basically doing whatever we can to make sure we keep hold of him, because he's a player we're going to need in 12 to 18 months to step into that role, because you can't imagine that we're going to probably re-sign both of Topor and Boogs. It's going to be one or the other. He's going to get a go at some point. But when we did see Jackson last season, he did perform really well when he came in to replace. I think Boogs was out for a couple of weeks in the lead up to the final series because of an injury. So he's a player that obviously he was happy to stay. I mean, there was no sort of rumblings around that he was looking to move on. So maybe he's a player that's just got to bide his time and try and take his chance. But I would be definitely looking to play him in the left back position. There maybe was just this game. We needed somebody on that side. Georgeski was going to be the player to counter Williams being on that right hand side for Phoenix. It was just basically he was just a victim of circumstance for this one.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure Bogues is already re-signed for next year at least.
As well, okay. Yep.
I think him and Hoff re-signed at the same time.
Yep.
They may not sign Topor again. Maybe it just depends how his fitness and his form goes this year. But you're spot on. Like, when one of them gets suspended or injured, they need Lockie Jackson to step up in a big way. But they've also got to make sure he's in shape enough in the meantime before that happens.
Yep, definitely. All right, so Lucas, the other player I want to sort of focus on was Hoffey in this game. Come in for a lot of criticism on the Facebook groups of having a poor game. I think people are maybe being a little bit harsh. I thought he was sort of starved of possession and they were doubling up on him. I think that Hoffey didn't do too badly in this game for a player that didn't really get a great deal of support from midfield, and also from Jair. He was basically doing all the running in that in basically the front half of the field, with Dimi on the other sides, obviously not the quickest cat. He was Hoffey was the one sort of breaking into spaces and trying to make stuff happen. You know, Jair was short of a gallop, so Hoffey was the main man doing all the running. But I think the criticism he's come in for, especially with the season he had last season, is pretty harsh.
Yeah, it's very harsh. I thought as soon as we got the ball, Wellington had everyone behind it pretty much. So you can imagine how hard it would be to break him down. And he was, you know, he was a workhorse. He runs all day, so... it's pretty harsh criticism, I reckon. So, yeah.
Boats?
Yeah, I didn't quite understand the criticism for Hoff. I thought he worked hard and he won it. He didn't lose a header in the first 45 minutes. It'd be really interesting to see him in an attacking position going for goal, because I know he missed so many gilt edge chances in the grand final last year. And that ball for Jair was awesome. Look, I would... I think I would be moving him to wide right, though. I wouldn't be playing him in a central type attacking left position they had him in. And I think Mitch was saying before, he thought that it was really interesting to have Hoff on the left, where he does most of his damage out wide on the right.
Mitch, do you want to continue that?
That was, That was really well said and thought out, Bodes. That was really well done, pal.
yeah, thank you, mate.
Yeah, it's almost like you'd, it's almost like you'd rehearsed it. Yeah.
Have we talked about how I thought the team was too narrow? Have I discussed this before?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of teeing you in for. Have we spoke about that, Ferns?
Yeah, no. Oh, you might have spoken. Yeah, just for those who are listening and might pick this up
in the edit.
We had a bit of a crap out with my Skype, so we've had to go back and start again. Had to go back and start after Bode's cut out. So you might have talked about being too narrow, but talk about it now. Why not?
This is super liminal messaging, isn't it? Join the Navy.
Actually, while we're at it. I didn't cut out, Ferns. It was your Skype that stopped working, so don't throw me under the bus.
No. I didn't say it was your fault. I said you cut out. You cut out while you were talking.
Join the Navy.
Yep.
Join the Navy. Steve Arnett.
There's your Simpsons reference.
What I was going to say was, I thought our team in general played too narrow, and it worked in with Wellington wanting to be very compact and defensive. Hoff was on the left. I didn't think Georgeski gave him enough support at all. On the right, I thought we were narrow too. Lockie Jackson was never providing width there.
Yeah.
Hoff just was isolated and suffocated trying to play too centrally.
Yeah, Lucas, it was obviously another point that Ernie brought up when I was speaking to him, that our width comes from our fullbacks. But when you're playing a left footer on the right-hand side as a fullback, you're not going to get someone playing in an attacking position down that side. So Georgeski did what he could. He had plenty of touches. We'll talk about that when we talk about the stats from this game. But it just seemed maybe we were playing quite narrow, but that was sort of the design. But that sort of mainly seems to be down to the fact that Georgeski and Jackson just sort of didn't give us that width.
Yeah, you're right. I think if you're playing on the opposite side, so let's say Jackson's on the right, because he's left-footed, he just tends to drift into the middle anyway, because that's where his stronger foot is. Hmm. And so Georgeski, you see, can play on both sides, but Ernie, obviously, he wouldn't have put him there unless it was for some tactical reason. So obviously, with Williams, he probably wanted Georgeski on him to keep him quiet. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, Williams has been pretty quiet for about four seasons now, so I don't know why he really needed to do that. Mitch, we'll jump back to you. It was great to see Ronnie back in the team and fully fit. How did you see his performance?
Oh, my God. I didn't realise this guy ran so much. I was so impressed. It's just he was everywhere. I loved what I saw of him last year, but he was stuck in second gear last year. I couldn't believe how much he buzzed around, how many touches he got on the ball. Like, you could play him false nine, you could play him a six or eight, and he'd just be wherever he needed to be. I've rated him.
Yeah, he was about fifth highest in touches. In 90 minutes, he had 54, higher than Jugarkovic, but nowhere near as high as Dimi. Obviously, most of the stuff went through him, but that was about the, there was quite a few players in the 50s on touches for this game. But Bodes, what about you? Did you think that Vargas had pretty much got it? Because as Mitch said, he was a little bit second gear last season, but that was maybe a little bit of shyness or timidness after the injury he had. Do you think he's sort of shaken that off and he's getting into challenges and he's running at full stretch and he's not really worried about injuring himself again?
This is the best I've ever seen him, and that's even including before he got injured last year. Like, he was just free of running, and I'm going to start, until Roy comes back, I'm going to start a new fan club, and it's the Ronnie Play in False Nine fan club. I want to see Ronnie in the False Nine before Roy comes back. I think it would solve all our issues. We could play Jair wide left or Austin wide left and Hoffman wide right, and Ronnie could just absolutely dominate through the middle, and him and Dimi could just interchange, and that would allow Dimi to play in the 10 and give us width. So, Ernie, if you're listening, play Ronnie at False Nine. I'm all about it.
Think about the combinations Dimi and Naboot had last year when Naboot was playing up front and Dimi in the center. Like, it could pay off massively. And Ferns, please talk about Ronnie's run, his 70-meter run. Did you see that?
Yeah, Roy Krishna having to chase him down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, you talk about it, considering you brought it up.
It was sensual.
It reminded me of Nick Carl versus Adelaide. Like, there was nothing stopping that guy, and he was just running with so much intent. Krishna did so well to track him down. and there was only one option he had, and he took it. Yep. Fair play to him. But yep, Ronnie down. Just he played into that. That was awesome.
Interesting, Lucas. We probably should the last player we should talk and would be Demme, considering he was the player that had clearly the most touches, 80 touches in the game overall. Second was Georgievski on 62, and then a bunch of people in the sort of 50s. A lot of the stuff was going through Demme, had a lot of touches. How did you see his performance?
I think he did fine. Yeah, he had a lot of touches. Was he the number one for touches?
Yep.
Or did you see he's in top five, number one?
Yeah, he was number one, 80.
Okay. Well, a lot of all our offense pretty much flows through him, doesn't it? So that's why. But yeah, I thought he had an okay game. Nothing outstanding that I can remember, unless you guys can remember anything.
He had a nice goal. Yeah, great goal.
Talk about the goal, but it's interesting that you'd think that we'd be putting a lot of passes through Vargas, but he was 54 and Demme was on 80. So do you think maybe those numbers should be flipped around? It should be Vargas with the more touches being he's supposed to be the focal point. Are we putting too much pressure on Demme?
I think because we had two number 10s, didn't we?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, like, they were playing both. So, yeah, I guess that's going to happen. I don't know who decides who gets the ball now. I guess there's still whoever shows for it. So, yeah, I'm not too sure. Bodes? Because we need to decide who's going to be the orchestrator in the middle there.
Bodes, what about you?
The one thing I just know about Demme from the game was he wasn't picking, in my opinion, other than the goal, which was awesome, he wasn't picking the ball up in the right areas. I think in the first half, a lot of the times he was just picking it up like just outside our own 18-yard box. And I think on two occasions he lost the ball because he tried to beat the player. But the one time in the second half, I think when we started to break and he got the ball more forward, he went on and beat the player and that started the attack. So I think just Demme just needs to choose his moments. I don't think he should be getting 82 touches. Like he's not a number six. That's something Steve Garkovic should be the one getting all those touches and putting Demme and Ronnie in those positions. So yeah, I think Demme should focus on being more forward, and I think Ronnie at the false nine would help that.
Ferns, what did you think about Demme's set pieces? I thought they were a bit concerning and inconsistent.
Yeah, I sort of was of a similar thought. We're nowhere near as good as what they were last season. I would have thought that with the amount of attacking players we've got, and just, you know, why is Vargas or Rydenton or someone else not taking these? It's another option that we've got. We should be able to. Demme doesn't have to be the only one taking all these set pieces. I mean, if it's not clearly not working and they weren't, maybe someone else should have taken over, but he just kept, you know, yeah, the set pieces weren't great.
I thought the two set pieces where he took those long shots, like, yeah, okay, they weren't on, but I thought all these set pieces, like in terms of attacking set piece, weren't too bad. I just thought that they didn't get headers onto them. But yeah, other than the shooting ones, I wasn't too fazed.
There was one decent. Was it a corner that Bogard headed over? Was it a corner?
He hit the bar.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
that was a good set piece. I just found that his set pieces just kept falling short.
Mm. I was going to say it looked short to me. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, is the onus on the player taking the set piece to put it on someone's head, or is the onus on the players to get on the end of them?
Bit of both. Yeah. Both, in my opinion.
Okay, no lo dos.
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk about the we'll talk about the subs. Lucas Shepherd was obviously subbed on for Jair at the 57th minute. How did you see Shepherd for the amount of time that he was on the pitch?
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. He was, you know, harassing the defence and getting onto balls, getting to him first. So he was making stuff happen. He looked really good, in my opinion.
Bodes, where did you see him?
Now, I'm going to bring up a name. I know it'll send Mitch off, but he reminded me of Jason Nadoski.
The Serb.
The name.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I think he's going to work hard and stuff like that, but I'd be very interested to see him finish at goal. Like, I don't think he got into really many shooting positions. So, yeah, I'm not 100% sold yet.
Mitch, right of reply?
I mean, no, you've got to expect that from an NPL player. They're just coming in and starting to play professionally. Probably the best thing he did offer was his intensity, which is something that Roy O'Donovan really offers us. Like, he defends from the front, like you were saying, Ernie likes to do. Like, Brendan Santelab, he's forged a career just being a pit bull up front. So, who knows? give him some more game time and see what happens.
Yeah, one Santa lab in the league's enough. Thank you very much. Bodes Vojica came on for Jackson at 64 minutes. I'd argue that maybe it might have been a better idea to do that earlier because it clearly wasn't working. Yeah, start him. That might have been a better option. But how did you see? Obviously, Vojica was a player we hadn't seen much of last season. Ernie sort of let us know when we spoke to him that it was tonsillitis issues that he was having, so affecting his breathing and everything. How did you see him for the 25 minutes he was on?
He needs to get a right foot. I think he only uses it to get on the bus. but he does so many occasions. And the same with Jackson too. Like, they've just got this complete reluctance to use their other foot. Like, there's so many times where Vujicic was in the ball when he could have used his right foot to pass it and would just move to the left, and it slows the play down completely. But yeah, I thought in the last 15 minutes he wasn't really hardly involved because we were the ones chasing the game. So I got no real comment. I think he was just another player on the pitch.
The thing I love about Vujicic is his clear game plan is kick the ball between the penalty spot and the keeper, and someone get on the end of it.
Yeah,
and he's so direct in that fashion. And if you've got smart players, like if Jair can position himself, if we had like Labino Haliti back in the day, if
the
someone's
chest.
On the end of it, they're going to score goals.
I agree.
You're making me nostalgic. Lucas, Mitch Austin came on for Hoffman at the 76th minute. I was quite impressed with the small amount of time that he had. He was quick. He put himself about. That's maybe a player that would be looking to force his way into the starting lineup sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we might see him next weekend, maybe, depending on how Ernie picks a team. I spoke to Laurie at the Wanderers preseason game in Maitland about Mitch Austin, and he said that he's really, really quick running in a straight line with the ball, but when it comes to like dribbling or slowing down and changing direction, he's not too good. But I thought he looked okay.
They don't run at Taylor Regan then.
you'll end up on your ass. Bodes, what about you, Bodes? That pass that he put across, we may as well, we'll talk about the goals in a second, but pinpoint pass across the goal, the 40-yard box to get to across to Demi to finish that off. I thought he did really well. He got into space, ran his ass off, and then put a pinpoint pass across.
I think I said in our group chat a while back, I think he's just, I'm not having a shot at him by any means, but I think he's just a bit more upgraded version of James Virgili, just very fast and just has one thing in mind, and that's just to get the ball in low and hard and fast as possible. So, I hope he improves his games, but yeah, he's ridiculously quick, and it's a good asset to have on the bench, and I think that's, I don't think we ever need to look to make him start, but I think if we need a pace option with 20 to go to break down defences and get behind, yeah, I'd be going for it.
Yep, definitely. All right, so we will talk about the goals. Obviously, Mitch, the first half was a bit of a midfield battle, as you said, that we were playing, and the heat map pretty much shows that a lot of the action was happening in the middle of the pitch, maybe a little bit more on our left-hand side. Obviously, Georgievski had 62 touches and a lot of ball movement going through the midfield, so that pretty much bears out. Unfortunately, we went down to an own goal of 32 minutes, ball across the box. Moss looked to have it covered, but I don't know. Did you see him yell out to Georgievski not to go for the ball? Georgievski goes up for it. It skates off the top of his head, goes over Moss and into the net. Who do you put the blame on for that? Maybe a louder shout from Moss should have been forthcoming.
If I'm Georgievski, I'm never leaving that. I don't know what's behind me. Maybe if there was a big yell and he didn't hear it, or there wasn't a yell, maybe that's the issue. But he had a go, and I'm always going to do that too, because I've been caught out in that circumstance too many times, and Georgievski has too. So it was just unfortunate.
Lucas, you say the same?
Yeah, I've been defending in the box before, and the thing is, if you don't get a touch on that ball, someone's going to stick it in the net, so you've got to get something on it. So, but it's just unlucky that it's flicked into the net, I guess.
Maybe Bode's a bit of a positioning issue from Mossy?
I think it's just pure unluckiness. Moss had gone to take the ball, and Georgeski just tried to deal with the situation. He's the first in line, and look, it's just gone the wrong way. So I wouldn't blame Mossy, and to be honest, I don't blame Georgeski. I think it's just pure unlucky.
All right. I don't want to talk about the VAR, but I suppose we're pretty much going to have to, considering it resulted in a penalty against us. Mitch, did you want to talk about it? There was a lot of confusion about what the VAR was actually used to adjudicate on. I think it was a foul on Nichols, but he was so far away from where the ball was that the only the fact that it was actually inside the box was the reason why it was given. But are you feeling hard done by with that VAR decision?
Look, I'm not a fan of the VAR at all. I don't even like the idea of it, but I particularly don't like how it's being implemented in our country. The VAR worked for us that game when Singh scored a goal and they adjudicated it to be handball. But if it works for me or against me, I still hate it. And the problem I had with the Singh one was he didn't even like intentionally handball it, and the ref gave him a yellow card. It's just such a shitty system. I hate it so much. And I mean, with the VAR debacle at the end, I think it was the Nichols one they're talking about, but yeah, it didn't impact the game at all. And I hate it. I don't get it. I wish it would just die.
Lucas?
Wow.
I'm going to apologize about what I said about Dimi earlier, because I actually, when they gave the decision for that goal, I actually just turned off the TV because I was so angry that they gave it. I totally forgot all about Dimi's goal. I keep thinking it's a 2-0 loss, but it was 2-1. Yep. So yeah, but with that decision, yeah, I just want it gone. I can't stand it. When you match it up, like you look out with other, I don't want to mention other codes, but it's just got to go. It's no good. Apparently an Australian invented it. Is that right? We invented it for the Olympics or something?
Hawkeye.
Yeah.
The thing that doesn't make sense to me, like, when the Mariners last year had yellow cards upgraded to red cards because of the VAR, like a couple of days later, the FFA and the referees and that came out and said, we're going to change how we implement it. It's only going to be for things that are actually impacting on where the gameplay is. So like you can still do off the ball stuff, but it's off the ball stuff that's actually impacting play. And whether it was Williams getting knocked over by Georgeski or whether it was Shepherd on Nichols, neither of those guys were anywhere near being involved in the play, and that's how I don't get that they've called either of those. And it doesn't matter which one, they were both very similar. I just don't get where they've gone, oh, we can call on that. Like, last year they addressed they wouldn't do that. I hate it so much.
Yeah, Bodes, I'm sort of a similar thoughts to Lucas and to Mitch. There just seemed to be VARing on everything. I mean, a ball strike is how do you adjudicate in slow motion whether a ball's gone to hand or a hand's gone to the ball? Like, you can't. It's difficult to adjudicate on that, and they just seem to be calling it because they can see a ricochet. And in this same instance, from what Mitch has said, I don't understand why they've called a foul and a penalty for something that occurred off the ball and was miles away from where the ball was going.
Yeah, so I've got two points about this. Number one, if VAR is not involved, we still lose the game 2-1.
Yeah,
it's just we move on from that. The point two is, and I think Ernie Merrick's brought it up. Like the problem I have with VAR is the fact that it's the ref now, and it happened in the grand final to us as well. Refs are now not whistle heavy. They're the opposite. They're not willing to make a call now because they know they have the VAR to back them up, and they're just making stupid decisions. Like it's just absolutely beyond me. Like I don't understand. Like the ref saw that thing with Nichols and Williams and thought not to award it, and then he's been given a tip off in the ear. Maybe you should look at it. It's not him saying in the ear that's a definite penalty. You need to give it. Like I thought the VAR when it was brought in was to get rid of the howler. Like the never again sort of thing. Like, but all it's done is just created further confusion, and it stopped the flow of the game. Like that Mitch Nichols one, like that we stopped for 10 minutes. And I think on our Jetstream group chat, it took us probably 5 minutes to work out what the actual foul was for. So yeah, the problem with me is the flow and just the fact the referees now are too scared to make decisions because they've got this thing they can rely on that, to be honest, is not very reliable at all.
Yeah,
the thing, Bodes, that I find is what you were saying about, you know, they can encourage the ref to make a decision or whatever. I noticed it massively in the World Cup when the Croatian got called that he handballed it. Like, you've got a ref out there who's running around and has a massively high blood pressure from just exercising and whatnot. And then he's got, like, four of his esteemed, trained, like, world-class colleagues in a booth, not running around with heaps of video and whatnot. So if they say, oi, listen, you should look at this, he's probably thinking, well, there's probably an etiquette within refs that says, I don't want to step on their toes. And also, maybe I'm too rushed here. And so they feel kind of guilty saying no to them. Because I know even in my local, like in our local IDs football, you talk to a linesman, you say that ref's doing really poorly. And the linesman just goes, oh, he's been reffing for 30 years. Like, we can't even tell him he's doing wrong if he is, but just play the game. So, like, there's a level of, like, too much respect between refs that they're not going to say no if they're called to look at it.
Yeah. My issue is that it seems that any time something's been checked with a VAR and the ref has then gone over to have a look, it always seems to get called. It doesn't really seem to be they've gone over and looked at it and gone, even with that, I don't really think it's an issue, so we'll just move on. Does that happen? I mean, the VAR has checked it and then given it the okay. That's not a problem. But every time they've got the ref to look at the iPad on the side of the bloody that's duct taped to a microphone stand on the side of the pitch, every time he's gone to look at it, it seems the decision then gets overturned and given. I don't know whether a ref's actually looked at something and gone, that's not going to change my mind. I'm going to continue with my original decision.
But they're meant to only adjudicate on things that are clear and obvious. And so if the ref's sitting there and he's just been told by like four refs that are very highly trained, oh, you've done something clear and obvious there, like, how self-conscious must he feel? And if he looks at it and goes, what the hell are they talking about? Like, if he still says no, like, he's just obviously clearly and obviously missing something else that they've said. So it's the problem with the people telling him to look at the screen. They're looking at it poorly as well.
Yeah,
I think, like, we can all agree, like, amongst this group, and I hope so, if all those the penalty had been given or the penalty hadn't been given and Sarpeet Singh was given a handball, like, we would have copped it and moved on. Like, I wouldn't call either of those howlers. Like, we'd probably be pissed about it for 5 minutes, but it'd be over. We'd move on. Like, with this, we're going to be talking about this for the rest of the week and the rest of the season every weekend.
Yep, it's...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's ruined a grand final already, and, yeah, it's just going to keep ruining games. There was controversy and air quotes around the Melbourne Derby and a whole bunch of it just doesn't really seem to be being implemented correctly here. I don't know how they're going with it in the other leagues, because I know it's in the Bundesliga and a couple of other leagues. Are they any of you guys hearing about how it's being used in other leagues and whether they're having the same issues?
Well, I know they didn't better quality refs over there who are doing it a bit better, but you saw with the World Cup, like I was talking about before, they still get it wrong. That wasn't a handball in the World Cup at all.
I think the fact they didn't implement it in the Premier League says it all.
Yeah,
true. I agree with that one. They've got it in England. It's being used in the FA Cup, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think they're talking about it for the Premier League, aren't they? I was in England recently and some locals were talking about it and I was just saying, mate, you guys do not want it. It slows everything down. Yeah. Like, it's just, oh my God, I'm preaching the good news, I think.
All right, well, we'll get away from that frustrating topic and move on to some sexy football that we saw finally after Lucas, after 95 minutes of what I see was mentioned before, narrow football, but I just saw the build-up and movement too slow. It wasn't the quick, zippy passing and movement that we saw last season. The one time that we really did do that, it resulted in a goal. It was Stevie UG passing to Mitch Austin in space, who then passed across, I think, about three players moving back in defence to Dimi, and Dimi just absolutely rasped the ball into the back of the net.
Yeah, it was a great goal. I didn't watch it live, obviously.
Yeah, so watch
I watched
it back.
The highlight after I found out that it was 2-1. But yeah, no, it was a great shot. Top left corner, I think it was side netting as well. So it was a great shot and great build-up play as well, obviously.
Bodes, frustrating that didn't happen like in the previous 95 minutes.
and all the other chance there. But Ferns, I think you'd love me saying it was a real thunder bastard of a goal.
It was a thunder bastard. We'll quickly cover off maybe a little bit of chat before we get to the post-match press conference about Wellington. Mitch, there was obviously a lot of doom and gloom from pundits mainly. The Phoenix guys seemed to think that they're not going to be as bad as last season. Do you think people have maybe written them off a little bit too quickly, or do you still think they're going to struggle?
Oh, look, I remember when we went through all our years of doom and gloom, and then there were a couple of years here and there, like maybe the Scott Miller period and stuff, where we had a better team than the year before. And so we were not great the year before, but we were definitely better. And so when people were writing us off instantly, I'm going, hang on a minute, pal. Like, have you seen that we've signed like Marcos Flores and those kind of guys, like whoever it was at the time? So I definitely vibe there's an element of that at Wellington where they feel they have a better coach, which I think they do, and they feel they have a better squad. Maybe it's a little bit aging at points, but also they've brought in some newer people. So I definitely relate to them in that regard. I guess Rudin's going to have a really good job on his hands to play all the away games and all that. And so I think they're going to be a bit more positive than everyone's making out. And I don't understand why no one's tipping Central Coast to be last. Like, where did that change? Like, they're obviously going to be last. So Wellington aren't as wooden spooners at all.
Yeah. Bodes, obviously, we've got a pretty strong connection with the guys at Wellington. And it does sort of remind us all about in our sort of up and down years where we were, you know, going from first team coach to first year coach to first year coach. And this sort of seems to be more Scott Miller and early Mark Jones rather than, you know, final Mark Jones or the second coming of Branko or that sort of thing where it just sort of all fell apart. Wellington are going to, and you mentioned it before, Wellington set up with a game plan to defend. It wasn't pretty, but Wellington are at a stage where, and we specifically asked them, and Frosty said they don't care that it's whether it's going to be shit football or not. They're quite used to shit football when they were playing well under Ricky Herbert. So they just want to get back to not getting beaten every week, and they want to make it hard for teams to go over to Wellington and to face Wellington Phoenix on their own turf.
I think their signings alone speak it. Like, their marquee signing is a centre back. Like, if that's not proof they want to stop conceding goals, I don't know what is. Look, they're going to play that way. They're going to get results. And look, they're going to win more games than they lost compared to last year that way. And one thing that I was really, like, impressed with, and I don't know whether it's been that way or pre-season with Wellington, that the fact that they had Nathan Burns and Mitch Nichols on their bench, like, they're proven A-League players. Like, look, I think Mitch Nichols might be getting on an age, but Nathan Burns, like, if you told me we were going to sign Nathan Burns at the Jets, I'd be happy to have him. So, yeah, look, and they've at least got some depth now and some options. So, look, I'm with Mitch. They're not coming last. The Mariners are coming last.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Lucas, I'm sort of a similar thoughts to Bodes. I think Wellington, there's three teams that are going to be down near the bottom of the table. It's going to be Wellington, Central Coast, and I think Wanderers are really going to struggle this season. I didn't like anything that I saw from them.
Hot take.
Yeah. What do you reckon? I think Wellington, a good season for them would be finishing, you know, seventh or eighth would be a turnaround, and just playing well and making it difficult, like I said before, making it difficult for teams to come over to Wellington and try and get a result.
Yeah, I think the supporters wouldn't mind how they play as long as they get results because of, like, the last few years. But I can't believe that Burns was on the bench. I thought he would be starting for sure. So that says they've got some depth. And I agree with you with the Wanderers. They've looked shocking when I've seen them play in pre-season. So, and I think of the FFA Cup semi-final. I saw that game, and the first half they looked kind of okay, but then they got pummeled. So I think Wellington will be around that spot fighting off the wooden spoon with Mariners and Wanderers. So, yeah.
Boats, did you say Wanderers playing? I think they played Brisbane, didn't they?
Perth. Yeah, no, I didn't see the game, but look, unfortunately with the higher market teams, look, I think on travel alone they usually all have the lightest schedules sort of thing. So I think our days of having those teams finishing in weaker positions are over, unfortunately. Look, I've definitely got Wellington and the Mariners in the bottom two positions. Obviously, Mariners being the last, but I can't. Look, it's too hard to call. Like, a lot of teams are unsettled. There's not many settled teams, and you can see why a lot of people would be putting the Jets down lower there, because we haven't signed anyone exciting like everyone else. So, but look, I don't think we're obviously going to be down there, and I hope not. But yeah, I wouldn't go calling making any predictions just yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's like the Premier League. You don't make a prediction of in the first sort of 7 or 8 games. It's probably similar for the A-League. You don't really sort of make predictions in the first 5 or 6 games. It doesn't really settle down until late November, early December. So, yeah, the upshot is stop reading too much into it. It's going to be better. All right.
The Mariners are going to be last.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's all you need to trust in. All right, so we've talked enough. What we'll do now, flip over to the post-match press conference with Ernie Merrick, being interviewed by the guys from Sky Sports New Zealand. And thanks to Fox Sports again for the use of the audio.
Ernie, not the return there we were looking for, back to Wellington. What are your thoughts on the game in terms of your performance? Where are areas that you felt that you could have improved on tonight?
Well, first of all, I thought the Phoenix played well. They played a solid defensive game, and they caught us in the counter-attack. And, of course, the more we had to open up to score a goal when we were behind in the second half, the more they caught us on the break. But having said that, we played some really good football. I haven't seen the stats for the second half, but the first half we had 60% possession, twice as many passes, and we kept creating goal scoring chances in their goalkeeper or the post, or we didn't shoot accurately. But credit to the Phoenix, and it was good that it was a good crowd there. What did we work on? Finishing our chances and trying to avoid the VAR.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah, I mean, interesting decisions at crucial times of the game as well.
Well, I keep asking the question, who's running the game? Who's running the game? I thought Sapreet Singh's goal was perfectly sound. It seemed to come off his chest and maybe touch his arm, but there was nothing wrong with Sapreet's goal, but the VAR said it wasn't a goal. And we were still asking questions in the change room. There was 2 replays showing. We weren't sure why a penalty was given, but apparently it was because Mitch Nicholl fell over on the edge of the box, nowhere near the ball, and we'd played on for 2 or 3 minutes afterwards. So is the referee in charge, or are we going to keep going back? Because if we keep going back, maybe we should go back further to the point to we toss the coin. Maybe have a look at tossing the coin, see if that worked out well.
On a positive note, the way Vargas and particularly Petrados linked through certain parts of the game must have been very, very encouraging. And then for Petrados to score that fantastic goal after a great counter-attacking move.
Oh, we played some good football. We had I think 8 shots in the first half. 3 of them were on target. They didn't have 1 shot on target. We were dominating the play. We just couldn't get a goal, and then we give away a cheap own goal. But is it credit to Phoenix, they were hard to break down, and they kept catching us in the counter-attack.
Adelaide away next week. Ernie, all the best for that one, and we'll catch up next time you're in town.
Thank you. Thanks very much. All the best to the local fans.
All right, so that was Ernie Merrick's take on the whole VAR situation and everything else that happened around the game. So not really much else we can talk about, Bodes. Is there any other news around the traps that we need to talk off before we wrap things up?
No, mate. No, I've got nothing.
No, well, the W League starts up this week, so we'll hopefully be previewing that game when it comes to the midweek preview episode that we're going to put out. It's going to be similar timetable to last season. The review episode will be recorded on Monday, put up Tuesday morning, and the preview will record on Wednesday, put up Thursday morning. So keep an eye out for those episodes. Also, NewcastleFootball.net/podcast is a podcast landing page. You can go and listen to all of the previous episodes, the archives there. You can also get the subscription links from there as well. Hopefully we'll be on Google Podcasts as well as Spotify soon. I'm just waiting to get messages back from them to say that we've been listed. But we are on Stitcher, and you'd basically just search Jetstream Podcast in your podcast app to add us on. We're on iTunes and Android and all those other platforms, so you can always check us out. If you want to get in contact with us, email us podcast@newcastlefootball.net, at Jetstream Newey on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. All right, thanks very much, guys, for listening. Really appreciate it. Thanks very much, Bodes. Good to have you back for the new season.
Yeah, mate, bloody excited.
It's going to be good. Welcome back, Mitch, and hopefully we're not going to be the last time we hear from you.
Thanks, fans. I'm glad it wasn't my internet that carked it.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it's yeah, that's right. True. It's usually your internet that's been the issue. And welcome, Lucas, as a new regular contributor. We'll definitely be good to speak to you a lot more throughout the season.
Definitely, and I want to hear every time I'm on. I want to hear some Mariners spoon talk every single time.
Have some spoon talk for them.
Do we want to talk about the Bolt thing?
Yeah. So Mike Mulvey on the weekend said, "No, we're not. We're probably not signing Bolt. We've got heaps of attackers. We've got this guy, this guy, this guy." And then the next day, Bolt's agent and the head of the A-League said, "Yeah, Mariners have offered Bolt a contract." Like, this is getting juicy as hell. Mulvey's going to walk out. Yeah, they say he carved it from a bigger spoon and all that kind of thing. Like, this is going to be delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bodes, yeah, you reckon it's going to result in a walk?
I don't know. I don't think Mulvey could really, if this goes pear-shaped for him kind of thing, like, I don't know if he'd walk into another A-League gig, so maybe he has to just suck eggs and deal with it, but... yeah, I don't know. The whole thing, in my opinion, I'm going to swear, it's fucked. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Put the expletive on. It's fucked.
Yep. Lucas.
Bolt's going to end up coaching them.
wouldn't that be fabulous?
Well, now that's delicious.
Yeah, that is delicious. Look, Lucas, there was talk that they were looking to sign him for $3 million. The FFA said, no, we're not going to give you $750,000. And it sounds like none of the other sponsors have come on board for it either. So they've apparently offered him $150,000, which... For a player that's only just starting out in his A-League career, that sounds about right. You'd be looking to offer him $150,000. He hasn't shown any worth to be worth anything more than that, but that's a fair bit less than what his agent wants.
That's it, yeah. I think it's... I'm not going to say what Boat said, but I'll just say the whole situation. I'm just glad that we don't have to deal with it with our club or anything. It's
Take the Maltese money and go, you're saying.
Yeah.
The big thing for me is they said that this trial and that was in the works for months and months and whatnot. This is why Ocon left. This is a goddamn circus, and I'm so surprised Mulvey stepped into it. It's just doing my head in. I hate every minute of it.
Well, look, and then this is probably why Charlesworth decided to splash the money out and get some proper players in, so that he was going to try and build a decent team and then stick Bolt in for the publicity and to sell some shirts. But I reckon he's going to be the one pushing this. He's haven't seen him for months or three or four seasons, and now he's all of a sudden decided to pop up and spend money. It all sounded a bit fishy. Now I think now we know why.
He's gonna build a team around Bolt. Yeah, that's just so stupid, isn't it?
Yep. I think we're all pretty much shaking our heads. All right, well, we finish off the night on a really high note on that. So thanks very much for listening, guys. If you've got any thoughts on the Bolt situation, at CC Mariners on Twitter, go nuts. All right, thanks very much, guys. We'll speak to you on you'll hear us on Thursday for the preview of round two.
Play Ronnie as false sign. See you guys.
Vamos el Jerkos.
Oh, you stole my thunder. I was going to say that.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
Lucas, what have you got?
I don't know. What's a good sign off?
You're supposed to come up with these beforehand, not workshop them during.
Maybe yours can be Screw Flanders.
Flanders. I'll find a good Simpsons one for the next one.
Yep, that'd be a good idea. Oh, I'm down, Benjamin!